Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is United States against Bronson Webster. Mr. Kaczynski.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm attorney Len Kaczynski. I represent Bronson Webster, who's the defendant appellant in this case. This is an appeal of a sentence imposed upon Bronson Webster in a criminal case in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. The first issue was whether or not the trial court correctly found that Leah T. suffered permanent disfigurement for purposes of the sentencing guidelines for a scar, which the record indicate might be surgically removable within 9 to 12 months of the date of the injury on June 27th of 2006. There was some discussion between the parties as to the appropriate burden of proof in this case. For purposes of argument today, I will agree with the government that, in fact, the burden of proof is preponderance of the evidence. But the guideline sentence for imprisonment determined by the trial court based upon its findings, which the appellant believes were clearly erroneous, was 57 to 71 months. Had the court agreed with Bronson Webster, the guideline range would have been 46 to 57 months. The sentence imposed by Judge Griesbach was 68 months of imprisonment followed by 3 years of supervised release. The second issue in this case is what the remedy is if the court finds that Judge Griesbach's findings were clearly erroneous and that a resentencing should be required. I think the parties both seem to agree in their briefs that the remedy would be to send it back to the trial court for resentencing based upon consideration of the guidelines as well as the other factors set forth in the statutes. This case began when Leah T. Was out with Bronson Webster and he injured her. She suffered facial injuries as a result of him hitting her in the face with his fist as well as kicking her a number of times on the early morning of June 27, 2006 on the Menominee Indian Reservation in Wisconsin. In addition to the facial injuries that were suffered, she also suffered a facial fracture. The facial injuries specifically consisted of 3 lacerations and the face of 2, 3, and 4 centimeters in length. She was treated by Dr. James Lee, who was a Green Bay plastic surgeon at the Shawano Medical Center. Bronson Webster was charged with assault resulting in serious bodily injury in Indian country and pleaded guilty. As we stated earlier, the respondent for purposes of this argument has argued that the burden of proof should be preponderance of the evidence, and we would agree with him based upon the applicable case law that was cited in the respondent's brief. But it's our position that even under the preponderance of the evidence standard, the government's proof that there was permanent disfigurement was not proven by a preponderance of the evidence.
Why wasn't it proved?
It wasn't proved, Your Honor, because there wasn't proof that it was permanent.
Do you mean that a person that gets injured must undergo surgery?
The person
to have it repaired?
They do not have to undergo surgery, but if it's something that can be taken care of by conventional medical means, that would indicate that the injury, in fact, is not permanent because it's treatable.
Well, that's a new argument. There is case law out there that an individual suffered a severe fracture or something, and he did not want to undergo the surgery because he didn't want to go under any anesthetics, and the court upheld it, that he didn't have to put himself through the anesthetic if he didn't want because of the danger.
I believe, Your Honor, that the case was probably a civil personal injury case and not a criminal case, so the considerations are somewhat different.
Do you believe a person who gets beat up as bad as she was must undergo the any surgery that's available? And who's going to pay for it?
Well, a person doesn't have to undergo surgery, but the court has to.
To do facial surgery after undergoing plastic surgery.
I would say there's no legal duty upon the person to consent to such surgery.
Well, is there a civil obligation?
If this was a personal injury case, there might be, or at least that would be considered.
In this case?
It would be considered in terms of what the damages should be considered to be because of a duty to mitigate damages.
Does the cost of the surgery mean anything?
I think in this particular case, there was, I believe, medical costs were covered by the Menominee Indian tribe, although I'm not certain. I guess the issue isn't so much cost as whether it's something that's conventional and done.
Well, yeah, a lot of things are curable. You can have all sorts of things that are cosmetic, and a lot of those are optional. I don't know about insurance or what the Indian tribe does or whatever, but they're permanent unless some extraordinary effort to fix them at some substantial cost, I would guess.
I believe that's probably a correct formulation, Your Honor. The key word would be what is extraordinary. And in this case, we would submit that having scar revision surgery is not particularly extraordinary. It's not a clinical trial. It's a well-proven technique that can be done apparently at local clinics and not at specialty clinics like a university or something of that nature.
What is your definition of disfigurement?
Disfigurement is any sort of mark on the body that would be noticeable by either by others or by the individual themselves.
Does this woman have a scar?
She had a scar as of 6 months after the incident when Mr. Bronson Webster was sentenced.
So doesn't that fit the...
It would be a disfigurement, yes. The question really then is a question of permanence, not whether or not it's disfigurement. I think it was under United States versus Cree. And we'd agree it meets the statutory definition, having a facial scar. But if it's something that can be taken care of by conventional medical means, our position is that it shouldn't be permanent unless it's shown that this conventional surgery is unlikely to be successful.
But what if the person has a fear of surgery?
If the person has a fear of surgery, there's no legal duty for them to have the surgery, but then it undermines the proof that the government has to establish.
I'm just puzzled by your argument. Why aren't you arguing that the sentence should be based on what would happen if the victim had surgery, whether the victim has surgery or not?
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
It's not a question of agreeing with something. I'm just wondering why you're not making that argument.
I think because it's essentially speculation as to whether or not she would have it, and it's really no legal...
That's why I'm asking. Rather than talk about a duty to have surgery or speculation about whether she will have surgery, one could phrase the legal question as, would the scar be permanent if she had surgery? Now, one might or might not be able to answer that question. I actually thought that that was the question the district judge thought he was asking. He thought he didn't know whether this scar was curable by plastic surgery because the opinions seemed to be divided about whether surgery would or would not erase this scar. Right?
That was
to be the district court's question. And then, of course, my question is, if we take that perspective and there's some doubt about the medical evidence, why is the district court's finding clearly erroneous?
Well, the finding is clearly erroneous because the burden of proof is on the government, and based on that uncertainty...
The burden of proof has nothing to do with whether a finding is clearly erroneous. They're unrelated topics.
The issue is that the finding is clearly erroneous because there's no basis in the evidence for believing that the scar is likely to be permanent if there's conventional medical means.
Your argument is that if we look carefully at the record, we would find that it is absolutely undisputed that with certainty this scar could be removed from her face.
It's undisputed that the scar at least is treatable. I don't think you can...
Well, there are a lot of things you can mitigate but not erase. If this scar became half as prominent as it is now, would an enhancement be appropriate?
On the record, we don't know. I'll reserve all remaining time for rebuttal.
Okay,
good.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much. Mr. Fennell.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Tim Funnel. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. I also represented the government before the trial court. As the court is aware through the briefs and the arguments this morning, this appeal is now about one issue and one issue alone, and that is the permanence of scarring to the face of Leah, the victim of Mr. Webster's felony assault on the Menominee Indian Reservation. The sentencing court had the benefit of the pre-sentence report, which included the plastic surgeon's report. The government also introduced a picture, which was introduced as Exhibit 1 at sentencing, to show a visual representation of what the wounds looked like before suturing so that the district court clearly could see where on Leah's face these scars were. And these were right in the middle of Leah's face. The descriptions are very clear from the plastic surgeon's report: a 3-centimeter scar above her right eyebrow, a 4-centimeter scar from between her eyebrows down toward her nose, and a 2-centimeter inverted V-shaped scar toward the top of her nose. The district court found that the scars were permanent, and therefore it found a guideline range of 57 to 71 months. What the defense wants to have is a remand based upon a 2-level difference. They argue for serious bodily injury, but not permanent bodily injury. The government asserts that based upon the state of the record as it existed at the time before the district court did not clearly err by finding that Leah's scars were permanent. Based upon all of the evidence in the record, I think that's the only reasonable finding the district court could have made, is that they were permanent scars. The defense, in its brief and in its comments this morning, has discussed the government's burden to prove. And certainly at the time of sentencing, the government had a burden to prove by a preponderance of the evidence the permanence of the scars. The obvious nature of the scars and the fact that they were disfigurement was not an issue at the sentencing hearing. And it's not even an issue on appeal. The sole issue is the permanence. And the government did make that burden of proof.
You can't say the sole issue is the permanence. You know, suppose by plastic surgery, everybody agreed that these scars could be made invisible at a distance. You never really get rid of scar tissue, but you can make it extremely hard to see so that it would be no different from somebody who just had a small nick. But that was permanent. Would that lead to this enhancement?
It could, but the problem is, Your Honor, that that changes the facts that were before the district court at the time of sentencing.
That's why this is called a hypothetical question. Now, what's the answer?
If Leah had an open and obvious disfigurement that met the definition of the guideline, and the district court made that finding.
I'm asking you whether it does meet the definition of the guidelines. You heard my hypothetical. Does it meet the definition of the guidelines? It is permanent, but, you know, it looks to be trivial.
Then I don't think
it... I have a permanent scar on my thumb. You can't see it, I will bet.
Then I don't think it does, Your Honor.
Then we come back to the point that permanence is not itself enough. We would need to know what is permanent, not just is something permanent, but how serious scarring would be permanent.
Absolutely. And in this case, it was clear to the district court that we had permanent facial scarring, or open and obvious facial scarring. So again, I don't see that as an issue on appeal. The defense concedes that the scars are there, that they exist at this time, or they existed at the time of the sentencing, and that the sole issue is permanence. And the defense certainly had the ability to bring Leah to the sentencing court, either by consent or by a subpoena. They could have subpoenaed the plastic surgeon. They could have sought to make the record more favorable to them on the issue of permanence. They did not do that. The state of the record at the time before the district court does not lead to a conclusion at this time that the district court clearly erred. Again, the only reasonable conclusion that the district court could have drawn at the time of sentencing was that these were scars that were in the middle of Leah's face, not somewhere else on her body, but in the middle of her face, that they had the measurements that were indicated, that they were visible to people that were looking at her, and that they were permanent. And as the government argued in its brief, and as the court has commented this morning, the issues that are brought up by the defense on permanence are theoretical. They are possibilities. And the problem with those possibilities is that the district court cannot rely on possibilities because just about anything is possible. And the question before this court, of course, is to look at what the district court did and to say to yourselves, based upon the state of the record at that time, did the district court make a factual finding that was clearly erroneous? Certainly the district court used the correct guideline. It used the correct analysis. And then to address Judge Easterbrook's hypothetical to the defense about the changing of the scenario and how the district court, how the defense could have phrased its argument in a different way, Judge Griesbach, in his sentencing comments, did indicate that he was giving some credence to the fact that even though this was permanent injury, he believed that it was on the lower side, and that is at page 33 of the sentencing transcript. In other words, he said, these are serious injuries. I find that the scarring is permanent, but the cuts as described in the pre-sentence are a matter of centimeters, and I think under all the circumstances that that warrants a slightly less than the top of the guideline range sentence. So if the defense had phrased its argument in a certain way at the sentencing court, the district court was receptive to that argument in the context of an overall 3553A analysis in deciding where to sentence this person and to fashion a reasonable sentence. But as to the specific question of the guideline application, I do not believe that on the state of this record that the defense has shown that the judge's factual findings and then its legal conclusions based upon those factual findings are clearly erroneous. Unless you have any questions, that's all I have.
Mm-hmm. Anything further, Mr. Kaczynski?
Unless the court has any questions, no, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. And, Mr. Kaczynski, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment and the assistance you've been to the court as well as to your client. The case is taken under advisement.